two things I will carry in my pockets at the end.
Yeah, you guys were always the cool radio station with the, like, fun magazine and everything.
That's right, Discorder.
The wishes we had, yeah. We always wanted a magazine like that back in the day.
Yeah.
My campus radio roots go deep.
We just actually reformatted the Discorder, so it's now in this new cool zine size, and we're really excited about it.
Yeah, that was always the cool thing when it came into the station. We're always like, oh man, this is so cool. How do we get this going? And it's really cool that it's all, like, even sponsored and everything.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's really fun. This is Basha Bulat, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. It's like having a clown in your head.
Sexy and Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR.
Well, 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 welcome to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. Or maybe you could be one of our podcast listeners, however you've decided to spend the hour with us. We are very, very, very glad to have you. We're going to be talking about just bringing that juiciness back into your life. So whether or not you're single, whether you're in a relationship, whatever, we're going to get into that. So joining me, I've got a surprise guest, which I was quite excited about. He was going to join me for the first chunk of the show, and then after that, I'm going to be having a friend of mine on the show as well, the lovely Anne Whitmore. But before that, there's a voice that you might know quite deliciously on the station if you listen regularly. She is the host of Synchronicity Radio. I've got Marie Bernard. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Hi.
So all you listeners who tune in the morning to hear her, surprise, you get an extra sweet treat at night.
Mm-hmm. Talking about stuff that I would never divulge on Synchronicity.
So in terms of bringing juiciness, in terms of dating, how are you finding this, in terms of, because you've been doing a lot of dating lately, and how's it going?
It's good. It's crazy, but it's a lot of fun. Yeah, I've been dating since I started back dating in February, and I stopped counting after about 35 dates. It's probably been about 50 or 60 at this point, at least.
That's a lot of dates, girl.
Maybe more. I stopped counting.
What, in terms of, makes a good date, do you find, in terms of the juiciness?
Oh, that is an excellent question. A good date. I think a good date is someone who is prepared, someone who is confident but not cocky. I like guys, I don't know about you, but I like when guys are complimentary, but not overly, like, you know, pouring it on too thick.
I like when they're authentic, definitely.
Authentically, yes. Yes, authentic is really important.
Mm-hmm.
And sexy and cute doesn't hurt either.
I think that's a prerequisite. I think it starts with that, because they've actually done studies where if you decide whether or not you like someone within the first 10 seconds you lay eyes on them.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, and if it's like a job interview or whatever, people decide within the first 2 minutes pretty solidly, just based on before you even open your mouth sometimes.
Mm.
I know, which is hard for us radio folk.
Yeah, because we like to talk.
Yes, we do like to talk.
But see, then I open my mouth and the guy's like, oh God, does she ever shut up?
any advice you would give, since you have been going out quite a bit and stuff like that, in terms of having fun, regardless whether they're prepared or not?
I would say, yeah, just be, that's what I've been doing, is just, I'm going to have fun no matter who this guy is. I'm just going to show up, I'm going to be me, and if he's a douche or he's whatever, I'm just going to have a good time regardless, and I'm going to, you know, flirt with everyone in the room, not just him, and so far it's working quite well.
Cool.
Yeah.
And in terms of bringing just that freshness each time, do you find a lot of dates are always the same, where it starts with a coffee or a glass of wine, that kind of thing?
Generally, well, because I'm doing a lot of online dating.
Okay.
So generally it's the coffee, and I kind of have the rule where it's like an hour tops, unless the guy is stellar or something.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I meet them at the beach, or last night I had a date, it was our second date. And we went for a walk at the beach, and that was nice.
There's some great, great scenery for Vancouver in terms of having some really cool dates.
Yeah.
Yeah. So beaches are a really good thing. Granville Island is wonderful. One of my guy friends years ago, when he'd meet a girl, he'd actually bring 6 pictures. Granville Island, the beach. There's a few others. I think Lonsdale Quay. They're just a few different parts of the city. I think over on Main Street as well, like a flea market. And then he'd have her pick the picture that he liked best. And then from there, he'd actually create the date.
Ooh, I like that. See, it's nice that he gives the girl options, but that he is still the man and takes that seriously and does the preparing. Because I hate when guys are like wishy-washy, like, I don't know what I want to do, what do you want to do? And it's like, no, I like to have options. If you come up with a couple options and say, we could do this or this, which would you prefer? I like that. But I'm a girly girl, so I like when a man is masculine. But one guy took me to the gun range, the shooting range.
I think I actually remember reading your Facebook about that.
Yeah, that was awesome. I mean, he was a really nice guy. I didn't really feel the chemistry when we kissed, so I gave him a couple more. We went out a few more times, and it just was not happening, so we ended it.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say that was really, there was a lot of adrenaline, and I could, if there had been chemistry between us, I could totally have seen him getting laid. Yeah.
This is definitely not stuff that would go on your show. But it is after 10 o'clock, so we can say things like that,
yeah.
Which is awesome. In terms of relational, that's one of the things I keep thinking about, is sometimes when we are in relationships, we long to be single. When we are single, we long to be in a relationship. And how do we actually maintain that, just that dating, where we can continue to date ourselves, date the person we're with, on and on again, regardless whether or not it's a first date, whether it's 50 years down the road, wherever.
I like that you use the phrase dating yourself, because I think that's really important to so many, especially women. We tend to lose ourselves in relationships. And then when the relationship ends, we have nothing left of ourselves, and that's devastating. So I think it's really important, especially for women, to keep your friends, keep your hobbies, keep your interests, keep flirting. Don't ever stop flirting. Until you're 80, you should be like, yeah.
And when you're 80, then you have an excuse to get to flirt, and they can just say, oh, she's just a crazy old lady.
Exactly. Yeah.
And get away with it. So practice, ladies, before we get there.
No, it's great, because I'm finding now, like, I have younger, hotter men chasing me now that I'm in my 30s than I did when I was in my teens and 20s.
What do you think the difference is?
It's me. I've always been fairly confident, but I'm feeling, since the whole, when I started dating, I was terrified, because I'd been in this relationship for like 6 years where I wasn't having sex in the relationship, and I was completely miserable. I gained a bunch of weight because I wasn't happy.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I finally had to leave the relationship completely because it was sort of a process and we broke up, but we were still living together and yada, yada, yada. But when I finally was like, okay, I need to move on and be out on my own and creating my own life for myself, everything started to change, mm-hmm. and it took a little bit of time before I felt ready to date again. And then once I did, I was just like, you know what? I'm going to go out with the first guy who asks me out who doesn't seem scary. I don't care if I'm attracted to him or not. I'm just going to go out, and I'm going to get practice dating. And that's what I did. And I just kept getting more and more practice and just being open and having a really good time regardless of whether I thought the guy was marriage material or not, and just getting a lot of practice flirting and building up my confidence. And now it's like I'm beating them off with a stick, and I don't even know. Yeah, I mean, you probably saw my post on Facebook the other day, like, okay, how young is too young? I have to have an age cutoff where I'm saying, I'm sorry, honey, you're too young for me.
Did I comment on that?
I don't think you did. It was this. There's a 19-year-old who was asking me out, and I've been dating a 21-year-old, which I do think is too young for a relationship. But God, he's adorable,
mm-hmm.
and he's just so fun to be with. And he's who I was with at the beach last night. So you know, why not? It's fun. I'm not committed to anyone right now, so I'm going to have fun.
And I think that's a really key thing to remember, even when you get into a relationship.
Yes.
And full kudos for actually ending the one that wasn't serving you well.
Oh, for sure. Well, and the thing is, it wasn't serving him either, but he didn't have the guts to end it, so I had to be the one to walk away finally, so. Yeah. But I want to hear about your dating. you're in a relationship, right? How's that going?
I am in a relationship, and I love him, so I'm really, really lucky. And he loves me back, so he's my best friend.
Yay.
And for all of you out there who are looking for dating, I really recommend, it's good to re-examine your values, and with that, in terms of having a criteria list, it's helpful, but don't marry it, because if you have that, sometimes it can block you off, and you may not find somebody that you're meant to be with.
That is so true. There's a guy that I'm seeing right now who I've been seeing for about 3 or 4 months now, and when I met him, first of all, I don't think I even would have been chatting with him had I not been so open.
Mm-hmm.
And when I met him, I was like, well, he's cute, he's a nice guy, but, you know, he's a student still, and I want someone who's, like, established and confident and yada, yada, yada. You know, I had my list of criteria,
mm-hmm.
and he hadn't been, you know, had any long-term relationship, so I was like, well, obviously he's dysfunctional, so I'm going to write him off. But we maintained a friendship, and now then we started dating, and we're not exclusive because we're still kind of figuring out whether we could see long-term happening, compatibility-wise, but I mean, I'm totally in love with him. He's adorable. He's a wonderful man, and regardless of whether it works out or not, I'm so blessed to know him,
mm-hmm.
and I've grown so much in the last few months through my experience with him, and as well as he has, too, and I never would have had that experience had I just been following my list of criteria.
And I think that's a really key thing. I know for myself, I had some deal breakers, and I think it's important to have some things that are deal breakers.
Mm-hmm.
My old list was they couldn't be homeless, and a cardboard box did not count.
Okay, I think that's fair.
They could not be dying of a terminal illness that I could possibly contract. So that for me, and again, I think it would depend on the person, but that was something at the time.
I figured that would be a given. I don't even think I'd bother to put that on my list. I never even thought of it.
Other things that I had on my list were I could not be, I'm going to sound like Bridget Jones, a workaholic, a smoker, total fuckwits. I can't remember exactly that expression, but basically a lot of that kind of stuff. And my partner actually fell into the fact that he smoked and still smokes. But and so for the longest time, I wouldn't date him and take him seriously because of that. And I almost missed out on a really good guy, and he's managed to cut down his smoking. And I think at some point, he's very respectful in regards to how he does it. But that was a deal breaker for me for a really long time. And it's interesting because even though he does smoke, I love him so much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, regardless, in spite of, or whatever the phrasing is for that.
Yay. Oh, that's so exciting. And I remember you telling me that, and I saw how happy you two were the last time I
came to
be on the show. And I think that might have been actually what made me be a little bit more open to expanding my, or shrinking my, criteria, maybe. Yeah, because
Thank you.
Yeah, the same thing. Like, if a guy smokes, I'd be like, no, I'm not even going to give you the time of day. I don't ever want to date a smoker.
Mm-hmm.
And I still would, it's my preference that he not smoke. But, you know, I mean, if he's wanting to quit and cut down, and I think generally being concerned with your health is an important value to have in a partner. But nobody's perfect. I mean, you know.
No, they're not perfect, and that's one of the things we need to recognize and realize the things we love about somebody it may change.
But yeah, keep flirting. Do you flirt a lot? I mean, you're a flirty girl, so.
I think I flirt with life. I like to jump in and just have a really good time and just really just play with the juices of it and immerse myself into things, which sometimes boundaries is a big key thing for me.
Oh.
Which, on that note, we've got the lovely Anne Whitmore is just about here. So she is she's with Diva Fish Communications. So we're going to be having her on in just a moment. So Mary Brenard, thank you so much for being on the show and giving us an update as well, and we will have to have another show together very soon.
So. Oh, it was fun to share my dating escapades with you. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We're going to take a really quick short break. When we get back, we will be chatting to the lovely Anne Whitmore, and we're going to be chatting a little bit about affairs, healing from them, and how to keep that juiciness that we, why we're attracted to it, what makes that difference, and moving in. And you've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR. We will be right back.
What is this?
CITR 101.9 FM.
A center for ants!
What?
We're a radio station broadcasting from UBC Vancouver.
How can we be expected to teach children to learn how to read if they can't even fit inside the building?
Visit CITR.ca.
Derek, it's just a...
I don't want to hear your excuses! The center has to be at least... 3 times bigger than this!
Found that canned ham, and I put it in a pot of boiling water, and guess what I'm calling it?
Soup?
Hot ham water.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, nourishing radio.
So watery, and yet there's a smack of ham to it.
And we're back. It's Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. And if you're just joining us now, we've been talking about how to keep that juiciness. So I just had Mary Bernard on, who does the show Synchronicity on the first chunk. And we've been chatting about keeping that juiciness in terms of how the fun of being single, having criteria lists and things, and some of those boundaries and knowing those value systems are really important as you move into the meat of the relationship. As you get in there, you feel good, and fighting about having an affair, because sometimes that stuff that happens, why? I'm not sure. Well, I have some ideas which we're going to be discussing, because I've got a great guest on, and this is the lovely Anne Whitmore, who is with Diva Fish Communications. She's an amazing coach, both for relational as well as for business. She's fantastic. Anne, welcome to the show.
Hey.
Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. As always, it's so fun being here.
Thank you. Well, I find with relationships, it really is person meets person, and I'm going to be keep the sex part out of it at this stage. And if there's chemistry, there's chemistry and it feels really, really good. It's all juicy and sexy and hot. It's what I technically is called the honeymoon period. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you get into things that are comfortable and things that maybe felt really good at the beginning. Things like, oh, wow, I just love how he goes to the gym all the time. He's so sexy. I love the way he looks. All of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, he has no time for me. He'd rather go and work on his own body than be with me. He's so selfish. And so our perception about those qualities and those things that we thought were things that we valued, all of a sudden it changes and we get resentful and angry. And then we start looking, perhaps flirting, maybe flirting with somebody else at the gym. And then from there, it's like that excitement and just almost getting that sense of feeling good and alive comes from there as opposed to our partner because of their resentment. And it's kind of scary, though, because there is, in terms of, I know the divorce rate is fairly high.
The divorce rate is ridiculously high. I do think that it's down a little bit, but maybe that's because people aren't getting married because they're a little bit scared about the divorce rate.
I thought you were going to say because they're not going to the gym. But
it might be the gym. I don't think it's a gym. But, they're saying one in two marriages end in divorce. And actually the stats, I believe, in the U.S. are almost 75%.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
1 in 2.
Mm-hmm.
That's really scary. And I guess that's not including especially places like New York where they've just legalized gay marriage as well. So I wonder what the stats are going to be like.
I don't know.
I'm very curious, but I have this feeling somebody will be doing a study on it. For those of you who are going to UBC, think about that for a thesis because I'd love to have you on the show and find out some results in regards to that. Just food for thought, my listeners.
So. Just sticking it out there. And so kind of what you're talking about, I think, is the things that initially attract us to somebody, that that danger element or their dedication to fitness, then can turn into things that drive us nuts. So somebody's creativity, they're so amazing, they have all these brilliant ideas, and then when you get into a relationship with them, they don't follow through, and their stuff is all over the house because they're so creative and messy in their creativity. And so that's really common.
So what do we do about that in terms of being able to love someone unconditionally? Like, what does that even mean?
Well, I think we needed to figure out what it is for ourselves.
Okay.
For me, what that means is that I love you no matter what. And I don't love you for what you do to me. I love you for what I can give to you. So I love you because I want to be in your life and make it a better place. Often I think our love is very self-centered. It's about what's in it for me. And so love becomes a bit of a barter, right?
Mm-hmm.
I will have sex with you when I feel like you are doing things for me that make me happy and make me feel good, right? And so that's when couples move into a little bit of withholding in this game. And the currencies are all different. We talked a little bit about love currencies before.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it depends on the person and definitely on the partnership. One of the things that I'm really getting into and exploring with people and relationships is that the dynamics in every relationship are different. And so how we are and then how we are in relationship can have their own flavors. And how we are with another relationship can have its own culture and flavor. And so we are the same person, and yet there is a dynamic in that relationship that then feeds back into the individual.
So it's almost like if you think of a person as a diamond where we've got all these different things where different people seem to make with their magnets seem to bring that out in us.
Yeah, that's true. And what I'm also talking too about is that maybe those facets are brought out more in one relationship. At the same time, the relationship can then infuse that gem.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's not going to be a diamond. Maybe it's going to be a sapphire. Maybe it's going to be a ruby. So it actually feeds back into the individual, and the individual can take on characteristics of that relationship. And so we need to choose very carefully and be aware of what are the dynamics in our relationship, and what do we want to honor and what do we want to keep, and what are the things that are actually toxic to the relationship and that are the things that we want to pull out.
So how do we put the lay the foundation for that right from the get-go before, so hopefully we can safeguard as much as possible against affairs later on?
I think one of the really essential things is communication. And it sounds, you know, it's so important to communicate, but it really is. And designing together with your partner how you're going to be in this relationship. So I will hurt your feelings. I won't do it on purpose. I'll try not to do it on purpose. But your feelings are going to get hurt. And so how are we going to deal with that? And when we look at in the dynamics of a relationship, what are the things that we choose to be with each other? And what are the things that we want to not be with each other? And how are we going to hold each other accountable for that? So that we're constantly detoxifying our relationship of the things that could actually not be good and healthy for our relationship.
And if a need isn't being met, so maybe someone needs to be recognized in a certain way, what are some of the key things? Obviously, communication is so important. And of course, I'm still a huge fan of the five love languages from Gary Chapman.
Yes.
So just in terms of trying to figure out what those are and being able to get those words across, where sometimes our partners may not be able to hear us because we're not able to speak the right language.
So I'm sure all of your listeners probably know your love languages, but anybody that's new tonight, the love languages are physical touch, which doesn't have to be sexual, although it can be. So it may just be a pat on the back or a really great hug or, you know, holding hands, arm around the shoulders, in acts of service, so doing something for somebody else, gifts. Gifts are great.
Is that one of yours?
No, it's not, actually. Oh. Yeah, I think it's one of my partner's. It's one of his gifts, but it's one of his gifts. It's one of his languages that he expresses in, but it's not necessarily my gift. Quality time. So this is not sitting in front of the TV side by side and we've spent time with each other, but it's actually spending time, FaceTime, connecting. You don't have to have a deep conversation, but it's really connecting time.
Mm-hmm.
And now the fifth one is going to escape me.
Words of acknowledgement.
Words of acknowledgement.
My partner, that's one of his big ones, which is why I write him love notes every day for his lunch, because that's really important to him. And if I don't get a chance to do that, I usually send him a love text, even though those aren't quite as cool.
Yeah.
And he keeps saying one day he's going to make me a big collage out of all my notes, which he loves it. It makes him feel really good.
Yeah.
And I usually sing to him, usually at least once a day, and make up weird words to song. But and because of that, he will play the guitar at home when we're home together and comes up with all sorts of really cute lyrics for me as well, because that's how he expresses himself.
So when you're talking about how do you bring that into your relationship, I think one of the really important things, you know, we're talking about five love languages, but if you don't have a common language around it, you're kind of talking gibberish to each other. So one simple thing would be for both of you to read the Love Languages book by Gary Chapman and talk about quality time, like that's really important to me, or thinking about when you feel the most loved. So when you're in, and it doesn't have to be just with your partner. It could be parent-child. It could be with your friends. Like, when do you feel the most connected to other people? And so by knowing what it is for yourself and spending that time knowing yourself, you'll be able to express that and express what you need and want, and then also take the time to listen to what the other person needs and wants.
And let's say somebody has been in a relationship for a while and they haven't set up a great foundation and they found out that their partner is having an affair, which can be really painful. What are some thoughts in regards to trying to pick up those pieces if they want to actually try and make it work? Where there's resentment, there's anger, there's sadness, there's grieving.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff, revenge.
That song about, you know, slashing tires and all that. Yeah, you know, really. So something about that really, I think, speaks to a lot of people, because one of the things that I find as a coach is processing through grief anger, frustration, some of what we've deemed our negative emotions, right? Mm-hmm. You know, there's the good emotions, there's happy, there's content, there's joy, and then there's the bad emotions, there's anger, and there's meanness, and there's jealousy and rage. And there is no good or bad to emotions.
It's just stuff.
It's just stuff. And really, emotions are information for yourself to get clued into how you're feeling and what's going on for you. And so one of the things that I would really encourage someone who's working through this process is to really, really let themselves feel what they're feeling. Are you feeling betrayed? Are you feeling intense rage? Do you feel murderous every time you see your partner's face or you think about, what was happening in the background? Whatever it is, because when we suppress or when we don't fully experience that and we hold back, it continues to reside within us. And sooner or later, it will eke out in generally the most unfortunate ways and the inopportune times. And so if we really allow ourselves to feel, then we can begin to accept it and embrace it and take what we can from the experience and move forward. But when we continue to try and put a lid on it and move forward, okay, fine, let's go for marriage counseling. Let's make this work for the sake of the kids. Fine, as long as you don't do this anymore, then I'll be willing to shut the door on that and we'll start a fresh page. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not done. Even if the affair is done, the emotions are not done. So that's a huge piece of it. And I think the second part of it is to be able to speak with somebody that is going to listen and be able to work with both parties without judgment, so that there isn't blame on the part of the partner that has had an affair, mm-hmm. and there isn't maybe even blame or judgment about the person that didn't have the affair for whatever the reasons are and the dynamics that are going on between them.
And that can be really hard, too, to find the right fit.
Yeah.
So when someone is finding a coach mm-hmm. or finding a counselor, yep. priest,
whoever it is.
Yeah. What are some key things to look for in terms of just feeling the fit? Because, of course, it's not just one person going and seeing, which can be a lot, I think, in many ways, a lot simpler when there's two people where you need to figure out what feels good for both.
Yeah. There are a number of therapists in the city that actually specialize in unorthodox relationships.
Unorthodox.
So, either open relationships or polyamorous relationships or, affair recovery type relationships or, I just call it unorthodox.
Okay.
So it covers the gamut.
It covers the full gamut. Yeah. I wasn't sure if you meant like the Obedient Wives Club that they've got popping up
in
Malaysia.
No, I don't mean that.
So, okay.
Well, whatever. So, but I think there are a number of ways that you can go about finding somebody specifically for that.
Mm-hmm.
I think the key thing is that both parties have to feel comfortable.
Yes.
Both parties. So both parties. And the reason why that's so important is that the work gets done when there's trust mm-hmm. and that there's safety and when both parties feel like they are fully able to express themselves. So I think that's absolutely essential. The second thing, I think, is that they need to be trained. So the person that they're speaking with needs to have some kind of training and structure in order to help facilitate moving this forward, both in terms of exploring what the current feelings are and some of the past stuff, as well as how they figure out what it is that they want to do. Because it can get pretty mucky.
Mm-hmm. And one of those things that you mentioned the other day was that coaching can be like having a decanter in terms of being able to kind of get through all the stuff.
Yeah.
And I was going to ask if, in terms of a situation like this, how would with coaching just be able to push through? Because sometimes I find with therapy, you can be in it for 15 years and you're still dealing with emotion and stuff, but you haven't really moved past because you're still going through all the muck in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things I like about coaching. And I love therapy too, but the nice thing about coaching is just it's pushing forward.
So I'd like to make a distinction between coaching and therapy because I get asked that a lot.
I was going to ask
that. What's the difference? And you're doing some kind of head stuff too. So therapy, traditionally, therapy has been really about the past and working towards the present. And coaching is really about the present towards the future with the past in the context. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't deal with the past, because we are who we are because of where we've been primarily. Mm-hmm. And we also are not just about moving forward, but also about really deepening what our experiences are right now. So really getting connected to what is the depth of this emotion? Where does it come from? What is underneath that? And what's underneath that? So when I gave that analogy of, you know, coaching, having a great coach is like being held in a decanter, because they hold this big open space for you, for the wine of your life to really breathe, and then slow things down enough for the different aromas and the different flavors to come out, and you can kind of sort through them and say, oh, and then there's that, and then there's this. Oh, and what's that? There's a hint of something over there. So that's really what a good coach will do. And in terms of a relationship coach, that there's also what that container is kind of shared guidelines on how we're going to work through this. So, and the couple gets to decide. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what I would ask is, there are no secrets. So we can't sit in session and then half an hour later the wife texts me like, oh, did you hear what he said? But you know what really is going on? Like, there's no secrets. So if we're working on the relationship, there's three-way communication and it's all transparent.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we talked about the toxins earlier. So how are we going to be, like, you know, treating each other with respect, right? It seems simple. And yet when there's anger and when there's frustration, it's really easy for other things like contempt and blame and, you know, nagging and all these other things to kind of come into play. So how setting some really common ground rules for how we will talk through this process, how the couple will work through this process together, rather than making the coach the referee.
Got it.
Your turn. Tweet, your turn. Or no, that's out. No, really, working together as a team on the relationship rather than working on each other.
There's something about affairs, though, where there's just that juiciness about it, feeling sexy, feeling alive, and I know I've talked a couple weeks ago, I actually had Sherry Winston on, who is a sex coach, and we talked about just in terms of there's a lot of sexless marriages and an epidemic in, and just a one in a two, you know, in getting divorced. There's a lot of stuff and a lot of pressure. And yet there's something juicy about the affair. It's kind of like the, at the beginning, and it's feeling alive, like the honeymoon period. And how to actually, what any tips in terms of just trying to keep that in, like taking that feeling and putting it back into the relationship. And I'm not saying, okay, I'm going to go to the gym and, oh, there's Bruno there. He's totally checking out my butt. But more like the fact that I can recognize my partner's evolving each day. And so perhaps in the lifespan that I'm spending with him, that he's going to turn into about 40 different people throughout that, and being able to see him for each person he evolves into and loving him for that.
That is a wonderful aspiration. And I think, you know, where we stand in our perspective, where we choose to see our partner as a new person each day when he wakes up, or see his development and the evolution of all the things that he can and will be, is a wonderful place to be. People have affairs for different reasons. You know, they may have an agreement with their spouse. Their spouse doesn't want to have sex. It's okay with me for you to have an affair as long as I don't know about it. Or there's a danger there and it really turns you on. Or there's something secret and taboo about it and makes you feel really sexy. Or to have somebody that wants you so badly that they will sacrifice things for you because they're willing to do that for you, and it, there's an elevation. So there are a whole host of reasons for having affairs and why people do it, and some of them are short-lived, and some of them are back-to-back, and some of them are on your back, and some of them, you know, last for years. You know, you look at polygamists that have several different relationships, and sometimes they don't know about each other. Those are not the norm. But there are a whole, what I'm saying is there's a whole host of reasons why people have affairs. So generally, Not always, but often it's because in their primary relationship, there's something not happening. Either communication or trust or stimulation or interest. There are a number of reasons. And so it's a wonderful aspiration to say, I'm going to look at my partner in a certain way, and each day is a new day, and he's a new person. I think that people that aren't having their needs met, that might be a big leap.
Got it. Okay.
I don't know. Maybe not. Yeah.
So if they're not having their needs met, mm-hmm. going back to the basics again, to communication, where the communication's been dysfunctional for so long, how are some ways of actually even broaching, hey, we need to go and see a coach. We need to go and see somebody, where sometimes people see, in terms of therapy, coaching, especially when it's relational, where their backs just get right up, or at least one party will.
Yeah. I was in a wonderful workshop this past weekend on organizational relationship and systems coaching, led by an amazing coach in the city, Jeri Zimmerman. And one of the things that she was talking about was, there's nothing that gets somebody's back up more than say, okay, we need to talk. I don't know very many conversations with a partner that actually start off really well, because immediately they're defensive. And so one of the things she was talking about was really the soft approach. So instead of starting in really hard, really kind of ramping up with, you know, sweetie, when you have some time, I have had some things on my mind. Could we sit down and talk about it? And so you're going in soft rather than coming down hard and saying, okay, this is do or die. We need to sit down and have this discussion because it's really important to me and it's going to like determine the rest of our relationship forever and ever. Amen. So I think that's one thing.
Okay.
And the other thing, and it seems really simple, but it's really setting, we talk a lot about intention, but really setting the desire for what you want in your relationship. And so if and when you're feeling tempted to step outside your relationship, if your desire really is to heal that relationship, when you move into interaction with your partner, in your mind, how are you going to be? So I can, you know, in my mind say, okay, I really want this conversation to be healing. And so, you know, as I say that, like, my body feels differently. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm coming from kind of a healing perspective, it's going to be pretty hard to be abrasive to my partner, right? Or if I can say, okay, I really want to get everything that I want off my chest because I just need to, you know, let it all out, it's going to be a totally different conversation. And so as we're talking again about the relationship as a system, mm-hmm. That relationship cannot help but be transformed by one party choosing to be different. It's not going to fix it overnight, but it cannot be the same because it's a dynamic process.
That's really true.
Mm.
So that kind of reminds me of, there was a great piece by Dear Abby back when I was a kid. My mother read it to me when I was quite young. Where the woman went, or the man wanted to get a divorce, so asked Dear Abby what to do. So she told him to wine and dine his wife, because of the fact it would make it harder for her wind and would hurt her more. So he did that, and a year later wrote to her because of the fact they ended up renewing their vows and truly fell in love again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even though it wasn't the right intention. The result ended up
that
being...
That was a big risk on Dear Abby's part, because that could have been one irate wife.
That's true. Oh, very
that's
true.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's important just in terms of just praying in. So what are some things that people can do on a regular basis just to keep their relationship juicy?
Well, you've talked about some things that you do. What do you do?
Do lots. Well, again, it comes down to love languages, so it's important. The other thing is quality time is, I know, one of mine, so it's really important to allocate specific time where this is our time.
Yeah.
And making sure, but my all-time favorite is, and I'm going back to the 1950s, but I find it absolutely imperative, when one of you comes home, whoever is already home, running to the door to meet them and doing the awesome hug where you actually take their hands, make eye contact, nice deep inhale. On the exhale, wrap your arms around them and just exhale down the heart chakra, which is where usually when you're a baby, that's where you're held. So it makes you feel super safe. Then from there, nice deep inhale again as you're holding each other. And bring it back to holding hands and eye contact again. A nice deep exhale. So they really feel seen. Really acknowledged. Because I think that's a real key thing. And then my other favorite. These are compliments to Tanya Diamond, who's the tantric teacher. Is actually spooning and making sure you do that every night. Where you make sure that the person who's more in need that day gets spooned first. And you do it for about 5 minutes. And you match their breathing pattern. The partner who's doing the spooning matches the breathing pattern. Pattern to the other, and you take your outside hand, you actually wrap it on the heart chakra as well, and just breathe. So they just feel really good, very safe. And then you make sure you flip it around so it's an equal thing.
My turn now.
And it's important, and it may not happen immediately where it's like clockwork, where it's like, okay, you've had your 5 minutes. Okay, let's switch it around right now. Otherwise, this isn't going to be fun.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because it reminds me of a friend of mine, Tara, who she said, yeah, we do position one, then position two, and then, you know, before they go to bed, and they're like, flip, it's my turn. So it doesn't have to be, you know, heavy and intense. You can be really playful about it and still both get what you need.
And we do it still even at sleep, where we automatically do it if one of us is having a bad dream, where you can hear the whimpering. And we've had full-on conversations where one's awake, the other's asleep. It's quite cute.
I had one, but it was really nonsensical. Yeah. I think there are tons of creative things that you can do. The main thing at the heart of it is really about connecting, right? I have a deep belief that we as human beings are created for community, whether that's with a partnership, whether that's with our family, or a group in our community, or we've lost the village fire, but that's really what I try to create, is like a place where people can come together and connect. And so when we don't have that, there's a deep need in our being, in our very soul, that's not being met.
And I think there's a lot of people who are alone these days. With social media and everything abound.
Yeah.
It's still not quite there.
Yeah.
Even though we've got all these tools developed to communicate more and in different ways. It's helpful in some ways, but I don't know if it's just almost too much selection.
It can be. And it was interesting. I was listening to a fellow on CBC, I think, yes, earlier today, being interviewed, and he did a test on Facebook. And what he did was he changed his birthday like 2 or 3 times. And, he got 100 and something messages the first time, and he got, just over 100 the next time, and almost the same amount the third time. People sending him happy birthday greetings. And they're more work kind of people, not just close friends. But his point was, how much are we actually connecting? And some of them were the same people sending in the same happy birthday message 3 times. So it really hadn't connected with them that, oh yeah, I just sent him one, it popped up on Facebook, so they said happy birthday. And so what does that mean? Well, we have all these different ways of connecting, and I'm definitely not dissing social media. I think it's a wonderful way to connect with people that we may not come across in our day-to-day life. And how do we really connect? Like, how, once we've made that introduction, how do we actually connect with them as a person beyond a reminder to wish them happy birthday? One thing that my husband and I struggle with, he's a very busy Vancouver realtor, and is the phone's ringing, and our, messages are coming in, and our tweets are going off, and there's all these things, and so we try to create some guidelines, and we don't always follow through. And actually, to be honest, it was more me now than him. So I've just gotten called on that. just saying. But creating some time where we really preserve the time for each other. And so this is you and me. And yes, clients are super important, and we need to service them in order to pay our bills and in order to provide good service. And we also need time for our family and our partners. So carving out that time for ourselves.
And I think one of the key things about carving out the time as well, mm-hmm. especially I'm thinking more for where you've got the 2.5 kids kind of thing, the white picket fence, which still does exist in this day and age sometimes. But with that is making sure that if it's Saturday afternoon, that there's not a lot of pressure to have sex at that time, where it's just being with each other. And yeah. it doesn't have to lead to that, yeah. where it's about connecting.
Yeah.
And usually that sometimes can follow that, but it's not the pressure mm-hmm, about that.
Mm-hmm. I have this phrase that I love, and it's loving with my clothes on. You know,
ooh.
And so so often in our busy lives, we finally get a moment, and so then it moves into, okay, let's get going, like let's get it on, right? And one or the other party might not be quite there yet. Mm-hmm. And so when you really feel loved with your clothes on, I think the other part comes.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's one of my fun little things.
That's
I love.
A really great analogy. Yeah. I like that. Yeah. So the other fun things you can do are doing some actual practical fun stuff as well, where you can't actually touch certain things. And again, mm-hmm. it kicks in with the whole affair thing in terms of the danger, where it's like, oh, you can't, because it makes things really delicious when it actually eventually leads to that. Yeah. So it's all about the tease. So whether it starts with sending a sexy text during the daytime, mm-hmm. and slowly doing the build up where I'm going to make you a sexy dinner, we're going to have some fun, and then it's going to lead to something. And at that point, whether it be something fun like a striptease, or where you basically just stroke him on his wrist, exactly what you want to do in other parts of the anatomy, but that's the only area you touch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So imagine if you... So I'm a woman, clearly. So imagine if my husband's at work, and before he heads out the door, I give him a kiss and I say, I can't wait until you come home tonight. And then as he's going about his business during the day, you know, I call him and I say, I just want you to know I'm thinking about you, and I'm preparing a special evening for us. And the next call, you know, I just went to the lingerie store and I bought a really sexy pair of underwear or a bra or whatever. And then, you know, when we come home, I say, we're going to go out for dinner now. And as we head out the door, I say, and I'm not wearing any underwear. And, you know, you're sitting at dinner and underneath the table, you're stroking his ankle with your toes and looking into his eyes. You can bet that by the time you get home, you're going to be naked, you know, because you've set the tone all through the day of what's going to happen. And not just in that moment, but you've been making love all day.
And I think that's a really key point, because mm-hmm. many times I think there's that generalization about men, that they think with their dicks or mm-hmm. with their cock. And for women, it's about the brain, but I think it's for both men and women that it starts with the brain. Mm-hmm. It starts with the thought.
And not, you know, it depends, like if there's an age difference in the partnership or whatever, sometimes the women have a higher sex drive than men do. Right? Or they like it in different ways, or they're more adventurous. One partner's more adventurous than the other, or one person feels driven a little bit in a different way. And so, mm-hmm. you know, there are all kinds of differences in that with partnerships.
I think one of the keys is just to continue playing within your relationship
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and giving permission. So as you're mentioning, just setting really strong guidelines right from the get-go
yeah.
and being able to play within that.
You know, that you're always able to say when you don't feel comfortable, and that the other person will respect it. I think those are really good boundaries to set, and guidelines so that both parties feel safe. And taking a playful approach and an exploration approach can really help as well.
So what is next for you?
Ooh, what is next for me?
Because you've got a few different things business-wise.
I do.
That you've got. Because I know I was speaking to you in the green room before the show, so.
Oh, my life is a big green room. So I have a few things on the go, and they're not all about sex and relationships. But one of the beautiful things is that we are constantly in relationship. You know, I'm in a relationship with my iPhone. I'm in a relationship with my husband. They're not the same, and they're not equal by far. Love you, babe. But, you know, we are in relationship with our parents and our children, if we have them, and our business partners and our boss. And so there are all these ongoing relationships. So in my coaching practice, I'm really working on coaching the person that I'm working with and helping them understand the dynamics of their relationship and their part in it. And so that's one of the big focuses right now. The other one is I'm starting a parenting group called Parenting the AWOL, and it's support for parents that have teenagers that have left home. And so how do they be with that? How do they understand themselves and the experience that they're going through, the anger, the frustration, raging against the system, being able to access resources that they need, case managing those resources once you finally get access. So that's another piece of it. And then the third, which is totally different, is how not to be a dumbass in your first year business. And so really taking a whole nother another angle, but working with business owners and, you know, first year and beyond, but really making wise decisions and setting the tone for having a successful business.
So there's a lot going on there. That's exciting.
I'm a multifaceted diamond.
Yes, you are. Or a ruby or a sapphire.
I'm a sapphire. Yeah, for sure.
That's awesome. So where can people find you? You've got a few different websites.
I do. My main coaching business is at divafish.com. So diva with the D and fish like the pescado in the water. So divafish.com. I have a blog there. I also have information about coaching and what it is. There's a lot of questions that I get about what is this thing that you're doing actually and how much does it cost? So it's all right there. People can find me on Twitter at divafish. And talk to you. You know how to find me.
That's true. Very much so. So listeners out there, thank you. And Anne, thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure.
I hope all of everybody out there is going to keep your relationships juicy, happy, and abundant. Mm-hmm. So if you need some help, you know who to call. I almost want to say Ghostbusters. But Diva Fish. No, that doesn't quite fit into the Ghostbusters thing there. But So up next is Hans von Claus's Misery Hour. He's a very sexy man to be miserable with. He'll be guiding us through the wee hours with his ambient music and his super hot voice. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be back next week at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock. Bye for now.